Truly uplifting to be in the fellowship at chapel again this morning. And the Lord continue to bless and direct our service for our edification and for His honor and glory. You probably have often heard the statement that history repeats itself. Jesus said that about one particular item, event, or condition, when He said, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. So this morning I'd like to speak on the return of the days of Noah, a sign of the coming of Jesus. The days before the flood are recorded for us in Genesis 4, 5, and 6, and also in several references in the New Testament. And I'd like to read those references to begin with. From Matthew, first of all, from Matthew 24, verses 36 to 42. Matthew 24, beginning with verse 36 and following. But of that day and hour, I should read the verse preceding to that. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. But of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not, until the flood came and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Then shall two be in the field, the one shall be taken and the other left. Two women shall be grinding at the mill, the one shall be taken and the other left. Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. Turning over to Luke chapter 17. And beginning at verse 26 to 32. We had 36 to 42, now we have 26 to 32. Luke 17, 26 and following. And as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. They did eat, they drank, they married wives. They were given in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise also, as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they builded. But the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. In that day, he which shall be upon the housetop and his stuff in the house, let him not come down to take it away. And he that is in the field, let him likewise not return back. Remember Lot's wife. Now going over to back to Genesis, where we have the record of the days before the flood. The first verse begins, and it came to pass when men began to multiply upon the earth, and daughters were born to them, and so on. But what we wanted to notice particularly is the term, there were days when men began to multiply upon the earth. Now we have ecologists and environmentalists today that pretend, at least, to be very much concerned about the earth becoming overpopulated. Now, there's a lot of talk about the population explosion today. And it is rather significant. From the time of Noah, the flood, after the flood, until 1800 A.D., after Christ, 3,800 years approximately, the population reached only 1 billion. It took 125 years for it to reach the 2 billion, 1925. By 35 years later, by 1960, it had reached another billion, 3 billion. 15 years later, by 1995, it had reached 4 billion. 1975, I'm sorry. And adding 12 more years to it, it had reached 5 billion. By 2000, it is estimated the population of the world will be 6 billion. I get mixed up in my figures. Billion is what we want to talk about. I mean, what are the figures we're looking at? And they tell us that, judging by estimates of the past, that the rate of increase, by the present rate of increase, by 2040, population will be doubled of what it is by 2000. Well, that's increasing rather rapidly. Now, we don't have statistics as to how fast it was increasing in the Old Testament times before the flood, but let me offer a few suggestions. There's not very much historical data or detail given in these early years, six chapters. One could go on to first 11 chapters. The first 11 chapters of Genesis record for us about 2,000 years. How do you think any historian today would write about 2,000 years in 11 short chapters? So there's God couldn't go into detail and tell us a lot of detail, give us a lot of detailed information in the short chapters that we have in Genesis. In Genesis 4 and 5, we have the lineage of only two of Adam's sons, the lineage of Cain and the lineage of Seth. But there had to be a lot of other lineages as well that we don't hear anything about. The very first command that God gave Adam and Eve, and remember, they were created fully mature, and the very first command he gave them was to be fruitful and multiply, propagate. We don't have any record of any propagation before the fall, of course. But after the fall, God said, I will greatly multiply thy conception. There's a footnote in Josephus' history book that suggests that Adam and Eve were the parents of 56 children. Notice in chapter 5 about Adam, it says Adam lived 130 years and begat a son in his own likeness, and after his image, he called his name Seth. Doesn't say anything about children born before that, but there were some born before that. And Adam lived after, and the days of Adam after he had begotten Seth were 800 years, and he begat sons and daughters. Now, if Adam had 56 children, and they all begat sons and daughters, and we only have the record of two genealogy records, and that's of Cain and of Seth. But suppose there were 20, about two dozen other lineages that aren't recorded for us. Now, there's good evidence that there were a lot of children born between Cain and Seth, because when Cain sinned, when he had killed his brother Abel, and God put a curse on him, then Cain said, "My punishment is greater than I can bear." He said, everyone that sees me is going to kill me, suggesting that the earth already had a lot of people there, you see. The Bible doesn't tell us anything about them, but it does say that Adam was the father of sons and daughters. And God had said, I will greatly multiply thy conception. So we're sure that there were others that were born. And remember, it says of Cain that he built a city. And it, from the record here, we wouldn't know that there was anybody there to kill Cain. From the record, we wouldn't have any evidence that there was a society that would have been ready to kill Cain. And it says that Cain built a city, and people don't usually build a city for themselves. They usually build a city for a large number of people. That's what a city actually means. It means it means a lot of buildings with a lot of people in them. So the population was increasing. And if you would take just 20 pairs out of Adam's 56 children and give them each 50 children, and we might well call attention to the fact, too, that the age of productivity, the span of productivity, would probably have been very, very long today. It's a few decades, and the age of productivity is over. However, sometimes it is lengthened somewhat. I have a record at home that speaks about a mother who gave birth to 30-some children, and her productive years went up till she was the age of 65. But the age of the span of productivity could have been several hundred years, since they lived to be nearly 1,000 years old. The span of productivity could have been several hundred years, several centuries, involved several centuries. So one can see how the population could have really exploded in the days before the flood. Anyhow, it says that it came to pass when men began to multiply upon the earth, and wickedness increased, and God saw that the wickedness of man, verse 5 it says, was great in the earth, that every imagination and thoughts of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Well, this gives us a little idea of how the population might have increased. The older people weren't dying off, and one of the reasons why the population is increasing as rapidly as it is in the world today is because people are living longer. And they're not dying off as fast as they once did, or as early as they once did. It isn't, I don't think, that there's propagation is being increased couple-wise so much, but one of the reasons is for them not dying off so early. And so with them living to be as old as they did, why, it's easily understandable that the population would have increased at a tremendous rate in the days before the flood. Actually, Adam lived to hold Methuselah on his lap. Fact of the matter, he lived until Methuselah was nearly 50 years old, actually. So you see how Adam was a great, 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 great grandpa to Methuselah, and yet perhaps had fellowship with him and enjoyed enjoyed having company with him. So there was a population explosion. Well, in the days like they were before the flood, and this is one of the comparisons, like it was before the flood, talk about a population explosion today. In these kind of days, Jesus says, I'm coming again. So there we have one of the characteristic returns of Noah's day that is telling us plainly that Jesus is coming. A second characteristic that we'd like to look at briefly is the fact that they were days of secularization, days of wandering away from God. In Genesis 4, verse 16, it says, and Cain went out from the presence of the Lord. He went away from God, ignoring God. And Cain was the father of a God-ignoring society. On through chapter 4, you have the activities. We have the activities of Cain's posterity and his offspring. And they were, everything was is secularized in that chapter. And when you come to chapter 5, that's the lineage of Seth. And in the days of Seth, it says at the close of chapter 4, after Seth was born, it says, and to Seth, to him there was born a son, and he called his name Enos. Then began men to call upon the name of the Lord. I believe, that in the days of Seth, Seth was a godly person, and he was a man who had brought revival to the people of the day. Then began men, after Enos's ministry, Enos's life and ministry, or after Seth's life and ministry, why men began to call upon the name of the Lord. So Seth must have been a godly man. And on through that, you just have the record of these men, how they were born and how long they lived how old they were when they died. There's no secular activities given to us at all. That isn't a conspicuous thing with the people of God. Now, it's true that the people of God are always known by their integrity, their thrift and industry, but the people of God, the people of the world, are known only that way. And that's the only thing that's mentioned about the posterity of Cain, the secularized the program that they carried on. And we do live in days of secularization, days of days that ignore God in many, many ways, planting and building businesses, big business. Businesses are getting so big. And James talks about people heaping treasures for the last days. You talk about heaped treasures. Well, there was a time when a millionaire was a notable person in the country. He isn't anymore. He's not really a very rich man anymore. There's so many millionaires. It's common for people to be millionaires these days, and even billionaires. There are billionaires in the world today. This is a day of secularization. I have a little pamphlet here on the days before the coming of the Son of, or the days of Noah. And this was written by Harold Martin, Brethren Minister Harold Martin, not our Harold Martin at Swatara, but Brethren Minister Harold Martin. And he gives a good illustration here of the difference between 150 years ago and today in relation to the world in general being a God-ignoring world. Just a little over 150 years ago, the first telegraph line was laid from the United States Supreme Court room in Washington, D.C. to a city of Baltimore about 40 miles away. Samuel Morse sent the first message over that wire, and it was, "What hath God wrought?" Recognizing God. A society that still recognized God. But he says a few years ago, another message was sent. This time the message started at Annapolis, Maryland, and went to Pearl Harbor by way of the moon. The message bounced on the moon and was relayed back to Pearl Harbor in less than 3 seconds. It was a 480,000-mile trip of voice carried. Was 480,000 miles. The first voice over the wire was 40 miles, and this was 480,000 miles, and this is what the first words were on this 480,000 mile trip of a message. This is it. Testing. The quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog. There's no recognition of God there. It's just simply a secular note or sentence. Again, suggesting that people ignored God.
I have something else interesting here.
I have in my hands a United States primer. This United States primer was printed in 1864, entered according to the Act of Congress in the year 1864. But it was printed by the American Tract Society. But it was entered according to the Act of Congress as a United States primer in 1864. It starts out with the capital letters of the alphabet and then the lower case letters of the alphabet, and then having them both together, objects illustrations to help them to understand it. And it would be so interesting to notice when they begin their reading lessons, what kind of reading lessons they have. But here's just one. When the reading lesson was teaching that there are words with several syllables in it, well, this was a reading lesson for that, for teaching those words that have several syllables. This is the reading lesson. Man proposeth, God disposeth. The drunkard's purse is the bottle. Fear nothing but sin. Gluttony kills more than the sword. Show me a liar, and I will show you a thief. If the brain sows cord, it plants thistles. An idle youth makes a needy age. He that steals eggs will steal an ox. It is easier to be than to seem to be. And so on. Now, when you come to the end of this book, they have the alphabet in longhand form, written form, from A to Z. And every sentence is a quote from the Bible. A man's pride shall bring him low. B, all thy works shall praise thee, O Lord. Clear through the alphabet, there's a quote from the scripture for every letter. Where do you find something like that in public schools today? This interesting, just way of a side thought, somebody in Virginia gave me this book because it has my father's name in it. And I can easily identify the signature that it actually was my father's book. That's how it came to be in my possession. But I thought it was interesting to note the difference between what the United States, the nation, published to be used in their schools today, and what is published today to be used in their schools today. I didn't bring it along, but I have a book at home on humanism, and that book portrays the fact that in public schools today, little children, grade school children, are being taught, questioned and taught about the possibilities of suicide. Humanists say that the earth is getting overpopulated, you know. It's not getting overpopulated. That's a farce. This earth could stand many, many more times as people, could accommodate many, many more times the population of what we have today. Some realists are saying that the earth wouldn't have any problem accommodating 20 billion. And the humanists are saying it's already overpopulated and we've got to get the population down. That's humanism. But those are some of the things that are being taught in school. One could go on. But as it was in the days of Noah, there was a God-dishonoring society in the days of Noah. That's the kind of a society that we have in the world today. But one more thing. In the religious world, of course, it's the same thing. Out of the Reader's Digest a number of years ago, I clipped this. When I was a boy, Harry Emerson Fosdick was one of the most prominent modernistic preachers of the day. He was popular. Very popular. He was a preacher in New York City and was modernistic in his theology. Was a very, very popular man. The Regional Digest carried an article a number of years ago about a man who interviewed Dr. Harry Emerson Fosdick on the furor over the God is dead concept. There was some of you remember a number of generations, a few generations ago, how active the world was and how much talk there was about God is dead. God is dead theory. So this man visited Dr. Harry Emerson Fosdick and asked him what his concept is of the God is dead theory. And among other things, this is what Harry Emerson Fosdick said. Of course, he says, our idea of God, he said, he doesn't believe that God is dead. But he says, of course, our idea of God should change as we mature. He says, we have to leave primitive concepts behind as man advances. Certainly the King of Glory ruling the universe from a golden throne is dead. The God that walked in the garden in the cool of the day, the man-sized anthropomorphic God, is dead too. The God who walked in the garden in the cool of the day, he says, is dead. In other words, he doesn't believe the Genesis story of the fall of man. And the God of the gaps, listen to this, the God of the gaps is quite dead. That was the one who accounted for everything man could not comprehend or control, from dreams to thunderstorms. The God that accounted for things that man can't understand or control, he says, is dead. Did Harry Emerson Fosdick have any? Was dead. But that says something about the religious world, too. See, not only the secular world, not only the socialized aspects of the world, but the religious world today is also a God, ignoring God. Harry Emerson Fosdick ignored the God that sat on a golden throne, that sits on a golden throne. He ignored the God that walked in the garden in the cool of the day, and he ignores the God who can do what man can't comprehend or accomplish, as though man is his own God. And that's humanism. Man is his own God. Well, Jesus said in days of, like it was before the flood, in those days when there was a society that was God ignoring, that's what the word Nod means. It says that Cain built a city. See, and Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod, a wanderer. That's what the word Nod means, a wanderer. And then he built a city. In days like this, Jesus said he's coming. Now, another aspect of or another comparison. Normal businesses and pursuits of life, they planted and they builded. They bought and they sold. They builded would take us back to where in the lineage of Cain, where it says that Cain builded a city, verse 17 of chapter 4. Builded a city and called the name of the city after the name of his son, Enoch. He builded a city. Now, again, it's just a mere mention of the fact that city building started under Cain's influence, but since there were maybe several dozen lineages that we have no record of, well, there was probably enough people that were influenced by Cain and sort of collected around Cain, and so he built a city. Now, city building is going on today at a very rapid rate. I heard a few times over the years that by the year 2020, The whole eastern seaboard from Newport News to Boston is going to be city a couple hundred miles inland. Maybe it isn't going to go that fast, but that's been the prediction. City building. Everywhere you go, urbanization is just growing and growing and growing. And this has changed quite a bit in the last couple hundred years. In the year 1800, only 5% of people of America, 5% of the people in America lived in cities. And by the year 2000, it is expected that 85% of the people will live in cities. So there was a time of city building back there, a time of big businesses, and all the crime that went along with it. I noticed in the World Book and Encyclopedia that one of the problems of cities, one of the first things that they mention is that they're centers of crime and wickedness. You know, it says here in Genesis 6, God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, great in the earth. And it is great in the earth. So normal activities, big businesses, lots of business, city building as the centers of crime, moral corruption. In these kind of days, everywhere you go, you see the increase, you see the activities, big businesses, and on and on. In these kind of days, Jesus said he's going to be coming again. Agriculture and animal culture is mentioned in chapter 4 in the lineage of Cain. Animal culture and agriculture, it says here verse 20, chapter 4, Adab bare Jabal, and he was the father of such that dwell in tents, and of such as have cattle. So Jesus said they planted and they built it. That would be agriculture. There have been tremendous strides in agriculture and animal culture in the last, in the last 20 or 30 years. Been tremendous strides. When I was a boy, we had a cow that milked 50 pounds a day. Why, she was a prize winner. She was a prize winner. She'd bring the highest dollar. We very seldom heard of a cow milking more than 50 pounds a day, and today they have them milking over 100. In fact, they have herds that are averaging that. You know, tremendous strides in animal culture and agriculture. Crops are producing much, much, much more. Last summer we had a drought that for a while it looked like the corn was going to die. And when I was a boy, there wouldn't have been a corn crop, I don't think, on top of that kind of corn, the way the corn looked. But we got rains and we got a real, real good crop of corn. But as a boy, I think 50 or 75 bushels of corn to the acre would have been tops. The best of land was only producing that today. Well, they're producing up and over 200 bushels to the acre. So it's days of advancement in agriculture and animal culture, planting and developing agriculture, tremendous strides. Well, Jesus said in days like that, he's going to be coming back. The metal industry is mentioned in chapter 4 as well. Verse 22, Zillah also, she bare Tubal-Cain, an instructor of every artificer in brass and iron. Metal age. When I was a boy, most things were made out of wood yet. Even refrigerators were made out of wood. We had a wooden refrigerator, and automobiles. The bodies were of wood, the frames were of wood, the tops had wooden crossbars on them. I remember we kept our automobile, we had a 1927 Chevy, Chevrolet sedan, one of the early sedans that came out. They were touring cars before that time. There was a slab of wood up in the overhead that fell down on the top of this car and broke through the canvas roof, which had been built up over wooden frames. And I remember how the wooden frames stood out when that canvas roof was broken. The running boards were of canvas, and the dashboard were of wood. And the dashboards were of wood. Well, today automobiles and airplanes and trains and ships and appliances and weapons of war and machinery and tools of all kinds are being made out of metal. They're moving some of this metal into plastic, but it's a metal age that we live in. And Jesus said, in those kind of days, there were those kind of days before the flood, and as the days were before the floods, so shall the days be when the coming of the Son of Man. Again, it's just mentioned here, but remember, we only have the record of two lineages when there might have been several dozen lineages that were multiplying on the earth at the time and developing in business. In fact, I might say this yet about the population explosion of that time. It says here in chapter 6 and verse 11 that the earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. What does that mean when it says filled with violence? And over in the 6th chapter, it says concerning the flood in verse 19, the waters prevailed exceedingly upon the earth, and all the high hills that were under the whole heaven were covered. And that would suggest that humanity covered the whole earth, because all the earth under the whole heaven, the waters covered the mountains and all the earth over the whole heaven. So it's quite likely that the whole earth was populated before that time. There was a music industry that's mentioned in chapter 4 as well, among the lineage of Cain. And verse 21. And his brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all such that handled the harp and the organ. That's just mentioned. That's all it is. But there were several lineages. So God couldn't say very much in a few short chapters when he's recording nearly 2,000 years in those few chapters. So there was a musical age then, and we live in an age of music today. It's quite alarming at what is happening. The right kind of music, I believe, is from heaven. I'm sure it is. The sons of God shouted and they sang at the time of the creation of God. Job tells us that. So singing originated and music originates in heaven. But like a lot of other things, they're abused. Harold Martin again, he has a little something to say about the present day condition as relates to music. He says the days of Noah are marked by worldly music making, and by way of analogy, never before in the history of the world has there been as much music as there is today. A great percentage of radio and television programs are musical in structure. Record sales of all kinds have increased more than 1,000% during the past number of years. We're living in an age of swing and jazz and rock and roll, which is beyond all description. The Beatles, some of you don't remember the Beatles, they came to America in 1964, I think it was, and they brought a morally corrupt, sensual music with them that brought corruption, that corrupted American morals, perhaps as much or more than anything else of the day. He says the beat of the music is similar to that of African beat called the rhythm of death. This is a musical beat which sets off a charge in the brain of people who hear it and incites them to acts of violence, murder, and more immorality. One could say a good bit about the present effect of the wrong kind of music, but we have to move on. In days of musical corruption, development of corrupt and immoral music, in those kind of days, Jesus said, "I'm coming back again." Age of global violence. The earth was filled with violence. Today, stockpiles of weapons and munitions keep on being piled up, even though it is estimated that presently there is the equivalent of 3.5 tons of dynamite for every man, woman, and child in the world. 3.5 tons, the equivalent, in stockpiles of munitions. That kind of stockpiles, the world is ready to commit collective suicide, really. Along with that, we have germ warfare, gas, poisons, terrorism. Terrorism is one of the most threatening aspects of warfare of our day. Terrorism, violence fills the earth today. Let me see, I have a little something here. Even it's beginning to be to alarm authorities how students in schools are able to bring guns along with them and to mow people down. Here, I have a little record, a little information here from a newsletter, religious news year letter. Speaking of a flood of iniquity, he says, in Jonestown, Arkansas, a flurry of shots, this was in the spring of 1998, a flurry of shots rang out near the junior high school, and when the screaming stopped, there were 4 girls and a teacher who lay dead and a dozen wounded on their way to the hospital. America, as a nation, also kills 4,000 of their unborn, their preborn babies every day. Day of violence. But America is not alone in that. 1.5 million babies killed in America annually through induced abortion. But they tell us that there are about 4 million worldwide. 4 million. Days of violence to the unborn. In days like this, Jesus said, these kind of days, I'm going to come again. They were days of willful ignorance. Jesus said that they knew not in the days of the flood, but they could have known, because they were also days of righteous preaching. Peter says that Noah was a preacher of righteousness, and I can just see Noah as the tourists gathered around to observe this strange, spectacular thing that this man Noah was building. I can just see Noah using his scaffolding as a pulpit and stopping for a little relaxation and telling his crew or his workers to stop now. And he starts to preach to the multitudes that are gazing at him, the scoffers that are coming around and scoffing at what he's doing and preaching about a judgment to come. But they just scoffed. They scoffed. Well, we're living in days of scoffing and of willful ignorance. They didn't need to be ignorant, but they knew not, but they didn't need to. They could have known. And we are the most informed people, especially here in America, we're the most informed people about what is right, I suppose, in any nation other than Israel as a nation, has ever been, because Bibles are still one of the best sellers, best publications and sellers in the world, and the Bible has the message. Right here it is. But we don't look into the Bible. People don't look into the Bible, and so they're ignorant of it. Even scientists today, spending billions of dollars, you know, to try to determine the origins of space. They could go to the Bible, get a Bible for a couple dollars, you know. They'd have the information that they are seeking for, they're spending billions for. They're ever learning and never able to come to a knowledge of the truth. Somebody said about modern sciences that they are learning more and more about less and less until they know everything about nothing. In days like this, Jesus is coming. Days of ignorance and scoffing, Jesus is coming. There were days in which the Spirit of God was striving with men. Jesus said, God said, my spirit shall not always strive with men. My spirit won't always, yet his days will be 120. I suppose he had reference to the time that's going to be then until the flood comes. And then he's going to strive with them in that period of time. But they didn't respond to his strivings because there were only eight people, only eight. Even in spite of the striving of God's Spirit and in spite of the preaching of righteousness, there were only eight people that were saved in the ark. Days of willful ignorance, God says, Jesus said, in those kind of days, like they were before the flood, I'm going to come back again. When those days return, then I'm going to return. They were days of a faithful few whose obedience saved them and condemned the world. By faith, Noah, being warned of God, prepared an ark to the save of things not seen as yet, prepared an ark by the which he saved his house and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. Days of a faithful few whose obedience saved them and condemned the world. Well, they were days of trends toward worldliness and wickedness. The wickedness was very great at that time, and the wickedness is very great. In fact, wickedness today is just winked at. People are not ashamed at all. It hasn't been very long until it was such a disgrace. It was such a disgraceful thing to be divorced and remarried that people, they just weren't a right fit in society. Back in 1960, there was a Rockefeller, it was David Rockefeller, I believe, made a bid for the GOP nomination, and he was refused because he was divorced. He was involved in a divorce marriage. The second last president that America had, who was one of the most popular presidents that the world has ever, that the nation has ever had, and yet he was involved in a divorce marriage. And today, morality doesn't seem to mean a thing to the nation. The thing that the present president is in trouble for, if he's in trouble for that, is his dishonesty and obstruction of justice, of judgment, and his lying under oath that he was telling the truth. That's the thing that they have to focus on now. His morality, his life isn't anything to be concerned about at all as far as the nation as a whole goes. The wickedness is great in the earth. In 1912, John Jacob Astor, a very wealthy man, divorced his wife and wanted to marry another woman, and he couldn't find a preacher to do it. Finally, he was a very wealthy man, and finally a preacher agreed to do it for $25,000, which in those days would have been pretty near like a half a million today. But the preacher, after he did it, after he performed the marriage, he resigned. He was so disgraced that he resigned his ministry. John Jacob Astor and his new wife were on the Titanic when it struck the iceberg, and they perished. They died in the sea. But it just goes to show what a difference it is today, how different People can't shame, can't blush at all. They're not ashamed anymore. Open immorality, it's just a way of life. Like it was in the days of Sodom. Let's see which one of the Jude says. Jude says that they gave themselves over to fornication and went after strange pleasure. It became a way of life for them. And that's what we have in the world today in America. Immorality has become a way of life today. And in days like this, Jesus said, I'm coming back again. I would suppose if there's one sign that is about as vivid as any other one sign, it is the moral corruption of our day, that Jesus is coming soon. Wickedness was great. Well, let me conclude by making a few practical applications. We want to be ready. Jesus said, be ready. He never said, get ready. He said, be ready. In order to be ready, we have to get ready, but we can't presume on time. Be ready means don't presume on time. Be ready. Be morally clean. We'll have Jesus Christ as our Savior. Christ came once to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself, and unto them that look for him, he's coming again. Coming a second time. Without sin unto salvation. And so let's have Jesus Christ as our Savior. Let's appreciate and appropriate his first coming so that we're ready for his second coming. Be morally clean. Blessed are the pure in heart. What does that mean? Blessed are the pure in mind. Keep our minds pure. They shall see God. Be careful not to be holding grudges. James says, behold, coming of the Lord draweth nigh. And then he says, grudge not one against another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge standeth at the door. In other words, keep our grudges down, because the judge is just ready to close the door. He's ready to come. Jesus is ready to come, and the door will be closed. If we're holding grudges, don't hold grudges. Be careful not to hold any grudges. Be careful not to be smiting one another. Jesus said, if that servant will say in his heart, my Lord delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow men, the Lord will come when he's not expecting him and will cut him asunder. Let's be careful we don't smite each other. There's different ways of smiting. We can smite with the fist. We can smite with a stick, or we can smite with words. Words are sometimes very sharp, and they cut deep sometimes. So let's be careful we don't smiting one another. Let's be careful not to be overcharged with the cares of this life. Jesus said that we're to take heed lest we be overcharged with the cares of this life, and that day come upon us unawares. Let's be bold confessors of Jesus. Jesus said, whosoever is ashamed of me and of my words, of him shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he comes. And if he's ashamed of us, he won't call us to meet him in the air. Let's keep Jesus and the Holy Spirit in our hearts. Oil, in Matthew 25, the five foolish virgins, five wise, had oil sufficient. Five foolish said, our lamps are going out. That's my marginal reading says, our lamps are going out. Give us of your oil. Well, I can't borrow the Spirit. I can't borrow from your experience, and you can't from mine. But oil represents the Spirit of God. Have the Spirit of God within. Sufficient, you know. Sufficient so that our lamps can be burning when Jesus comes. Prayer and devotion. Watch and pray. Be looking for him. Unto them that look for him shall he appear the second time. If we're looking for him, we're so prone to be earthbound and be interested and concerned about our earthly things that we forget to look up. The disciples were standing there watching Jesus, looking up after Jesus left. And the angel came back and said, well, why do you stand looking up into heaven? And I suppose if there's anything the angels would say to us today, it would be, why don't you look up?